Hi everyone! Today I had the privilege of interviewing Dr. Felicia Pullen, CEO and founder of Pillars NYC and Safe in Harlem, two nonprofit organizations that focus on providing resources to community members within her neighborhood. Dr. Pullen opens up to us about her struggles with addiction, her experience leaving her comfortable lifestyle to better pursue her purpose, and advice that she has for all women of color seeking to pursue entrepreneurship, politics, or any form of leadership. Without further ado, let's jump right into our conversation.
So I, of course, did a little bit of my homework before this because I didn't want to come into this conversation unprepared. But I saw that you are the founder of not one, but two really influential and like community-oriented organizations. And I was wondering if you could speak a little bit about that and maybe touch on your journey towards why you pivoted from advertisement into sort of social work and more community-oriented work.
Yeah, sure. And that's a question that I get often. So the one thing, the analogy that best fits that question is when I was in ad sales and being one of very few Black women selling for general market magazines, I was like this Tiffany's box. And it was beautiful on the outside. And you opened up the top and there was just shredded paper on the inside. So definitely allowed me and afforded me to buy some beautiful things, but it did not fill me on the inside. And my own journey in substance use and misuse and addiction led me to treatment. And while in treatment, I knew I couldn't go back to ad sales. I couldn't go back to corporate America because that definitely contributed to my misuse of substances. And I decided that I was going to help other people in recovery. I didn't know what that meant. I knew I wanted to come back to Harlem and get back to Harlem. I didn't know what that meant. And this journey really chose me. I did not specifically choose it.
I feel like when we talk about Black women in leadership, we're always looking so large scale and looking at like just a lot of talk about Black women in leadership isn't really around entrepreneurship. And after your experience with substance abuse and you sort of realizing that advertisement just wasn't a conducive environment for you, what steps did you take into going to start a business? Like, I feel like that seems like such a big and like daunting task, and you've done it not once but twice successfully in terms of Pillars and Safe in Harlem.
And my own brand as well, which is Dr. P. So that's the third launch.
And you went back to school and got your doctorate. Like, and I, anyway, it's just so impressive.
Yeah. Well, you know, one thing that I often suggest to people as they are beginning an entrepreneurial journey, whether it's for-profit or not-for-profit, is to ask themselves, you know, the five W's, right? The who, what, when, where, and why. And that was the foundation of how I got to do this work. I knew the who. I wanted to work with people of color. The where was in Harlem. The what I wanted to do was prevention of the onset of substance use. And then recovery kind of revealed itself along the journey. The where was in Harlem because that's when I was born and raised in the community that I felt most connected. And the why is because I knew the impact of structural racism and the oppression, the marginalization, and I wanted to do something about it. So, you know, whether, again, whether it's for profit or not for profit, if anyone can answer those five W's, they will get to their happy place. The other thing that I suggest and that worked for me is asking, like, what would I do absolutely for free if money were not an issue? And, you know, it was clear to me that I needed to do something with my recovery story, and I wanted to share that journey with other people as one of multiple pathways to get to where I consider myself to be at least on some stable ground. And I just wanted to share that. And money was not a factor for that.
So much of sort of being a woman of color in any sort of business environment has a lot to do with this sort of like stereotype of the strong Black woman and combating against the idea of vulnerability. And you instead took that vulnerability and turned it into something that could empower your community. And I was just wondering how you balance sort of the expectations that society has for you as a Black woman and that expectation to be strong and to be this sort of hard leader with you sharing such a vulnerable part of your life and taking that vulnerability into something that could help others in similar situations.
You know, that's a great question. And I don't think that any of us just wears one hat, right? So as we begin to look at all the pieces that we are, and I don't really use the word intersectionality unless I use it correctly, right? And that's in how it's rooted in oppression. So our intersections and how they're rooted in oppression. So I'll just say the many hats. Yeah, I am a strong and vulnerable mother. I am a strong and vulnerable woman. I'm a strong and vulnerable leader. And some of that is rooted outside of having a history of addiction, right? Because that's only one vulnerability, but I'm also a soft person on the inside, which can, you know, which also needs to be protected, right? And so I think it's important to be very introspective and to know who you are. And so I'll segue into better answering your question with this. I knew that if I took ownership over my story or what could be perceived as a vulnerability, then that takes away the vulnerability, right? And so if I'm leading with, yes, I'm a woman in recovery, yes, I've had a relationship with, you know, drug use, then that takes the power away from other people taking that story and trying to use that as a weapon against me. So, you know, there's a lot that's packed into the question that you just asked me, but I don't have an issue with showing multiple facets of who I am. Kind of like a diamond, right? It's multifaceted. That helps it to shine.
That is so amazing. And also, I feel like a quality that's really overlooked in a lot of women, sort of their ability to wear these different hats and sort of be as multifaceted as we are. I feel like when we're looking at more so women specifically, we often look at them from like one lens or one perspective. How do you balance? You mentioned that you're a mother, you have multiple successful businesses, and you also separate and take time to sort of care to yourself, and you understand the value in that. And especially as
I don't do a good job with that though.
I feel like as an undergrad, it's so hard to like fathom, especially when you're in an environment where like for a lot of my school experience, I've sort of been throwing myself into education and trying to combat that idea of like imposter syndrome myself. And as you've grown and learned and entered different industries and also tended to your own personal relationships, what advice do you have to sort of like give yourself the space to grow while still pursuing your goals, while still tending to yourself? And this is something that I feel like nobody ever really fully learns, but I'm sure you have.
I was just going to say that, you know, I still do not do a really great job. But because I'm a researcher, right, that likes to look at data, I will force myself to look at the data to dispel any myths about imposter syndrome, right? And it's something that, even though, you know, I have all of these letters behind my name, I still stop and ask myself, how did I get here? But the data tells me how I got here, right? I got here because I went back to school. I put one foot in front of the other. I took one step at a time. I took a leap of faith and I wrote that first grant and it was funded. I wrote another grant and it was funded. I wrote another grant and it was funded. And so that helps to dispel the myths of I can't, you know, I don't belong here. My phone is packed with numbers from national, state, city, local leaders. And that data that tells me that other people see me sometimes differently than how I may see myself. But that helps to dispel the myths, right? When you have thousands of numbers in your phone where you can pick up the phone and call someone and move a mountain in someone else's world, that's power, right? And so I think that it's important to look at the data around you that will dispel some of the myths of I'm not good enough, I can't, I don't belong here. And then on the other side of your question was the self-care piece. I still feel like I have so much work to do and so many mountains to climb that I don't have time to rest. And I'm sure that some of that comes from, you know, a parent that said to me, you can sleep when you're dead.
Yeah.
But it's very, really important to get rest and to stop and breathe and practice that self-care. But I don't come from a generation of that. So that's still foreign to me.
Like my generation is one that sort of has started to pay more attention to it, but I was definitely raised by parents who are immigrants and who are very much pushing towards success and towards being the best. And my parents always did that with the best intentions, but like it's hard to figure out where to draw the line for yourself when you spend so much of your time like just pushing and what's the next goal, what's the next accomplishment. And then on top of that, the pressures of being a woman and being a woman of color. And then for me, it's being a first generation immigrant. So how does being a Black woman influence how you sort of navigate these professional spaces, and then also how you sort of like tell yourself to take time to rest and sort of combat those ideas of like, I have to keep working, I have to do the next thing, get the next grant, complete the next goal?
So as a Black woman, I show up in spaces unapologetically Black all the time.
I love
that. People who know me, they know what to expect. I don't dial it down. I don't code switch to the point where I am fitting in and melting among the general market. I don't do that. And that is not expected of me, right? Because I have forged this this path of kicking down doors for the benefit of people like me. And so, I they know what they're going to get. So I don't dial it down. I am unapologetically Black all the time. And I'm good with that. That helps me to keep moving. But I will also say that it is also a contributing factor to stress and being overwhelmed often, because I'm fighting against the machines and the systems.
Yeah.
So it's not like, you know, there's just one individual that I feel like I can have a decent conversation with that can change what's happening here on the ground. It is fighting against the city, the state, the local government. It's these machines that are rooted in the oppression of Black people. And that is how they are designed to work, and they are working exactly how they are designed. And so with that, it's difficult to keep doing the work.
Yeah, I mean, and especially in New York City, and we like to sort of go with this myth of like, it's not as big of a problem there, but like, you look at Harlem and you look at Morningside Heights and you look at just sort of like the institutions that continue to make it hard to get affordable housing, or gentrification sort of pushing people out of their homes. And then in addition to that, you show up so authentically. and that's just such a hard thing, or at least it's been portrayed as a hard thing for Black women to do. When we're looking at Black women in politics, I'm curious as to what you think about sort of the respectability politics that Black women are told that they need to uphold when they're entering either local governments, city councils, or like higher levels of government, like the Senate, the House, et cetera.
Yeah, it's hard to be a Black woman regardless of the field.
Yeah.
right? And so I am not sure that, you know, Black women in politics are treated any differently than Black women in medicine, you know, Black women leaders, CEOs. It's a tough road from many different perspectives. And I think that when we, Black people, come together to support one another, like, one thing I love about coming to work is that people in my office, they pour into me when I can't pour into myself. And they give me enough in my cup to go outside of these doors and do what I need to do. And I think that, you know, we as Black people can do more of that. We need to start dismantling some of that, you know, intra-relational dysfunction. Yeah. You're shaking your head. You know what I'm talking about.
Because I know exactly what words you're reaching for, because you're right. And it's in so many, like, upper and lower level institutions that we sort of pretend like it's not there.
Yeah. And I think that we can do a better job of lifting one another up. Those of us that are there and in the positions to be a voice at tables where others are not invited, I need them behind me going, yes, go ahead, go for it. Tell them what we want, tell them what, right? We put you in this position to be able to do that. And sometimes we can tend to focus on that one other voice, not the 99 on the side that are going, yes, go, go, go. That one that's going, you don't belong there. Who are you to speak for us, right? So it's kind of a need to quiet the chatter of the one and really lift it up.
Right. And how do you go about fostering that sort of community within your work environment? Like, I'm sure that you do a lot of the lifting as well in terms of establishing that relationship with your team. And I was looking at a lot of the staff that you have at Pillars, and a lot of them are people of color, and you create this relationship and this safe environment. And I'm curious as to what your role in that feels like to you, and how you go about making sure that that's something that you accomplish with sort of the power that you have.
Yeah, I think the one thing that really helps people to do that is not separating myself from them. I am them. I am them. I am everyone outside of my office. I am everyone in this community. I am everyone who is like me, right, in color. And so I think that that's the thing that really helps to bind us all. I don't separate myself from them because I sit in the office and write the grant. It's just one of the jobs that I do. But yeah.
No, it's, I mean, you're, and I'm like sitting here talking and you're so humble about it, but like your resume really is very impressive in terms of not even just your accomplishments, but also what you've overcome to get yourself into these positions, and then to decide that you are going to use your intelligence, use your influence, and give back to the community. I went to school all my life in Morningside Heights in Harlem. So like the fact that you do so much work with that community means a lot to me because it's so close to my heart. But I don't want to take up too much more of your time because I promised that this would be brief. But I do want to know, this is being presented to my class of all women of color, Black women who hope to see themselves in positions of leadership or just want to know more about Black women in leadership, because it's not something that we're talking about a lot. And I was curious as to what advice you have for women of color that want to step into these positions, veer off of what initial path they had expected for themselves, or just trying to sort of break into positions where it's either entrepreneurship or politics or any sort of leadership, really.
Yeah, be fearless, be authentic. You know, people can detect an authenticity. You know what word I'm trying to say, right?
An authenticity.
That's the word. Not enough coffee today.
That makes two of us.
Be clear about the goal and the mission that you want to achieve. Be flexible. understand that your wants and your needs may not be what a higher power has in store for you. I never saw this not-for-profit as my path, but I was willing to hear and then to act on what was being asked of me to do. And that's opened doors that I could never have dreamed of. And so, you know, I think that we don't always know what's best for us. Chasing money is not the path that'll buy you pretty things, but who are you, and are you being authentic to who you are and really living your life's purpose? And I think that once you live your life's purpose, your real true purpose, there is no stopping you, right, in that trajectory and the happiness that comes with it and the willingness to work harder than you have ever worked in your life, being your authentic self and following your heart. So that would be my advice.
That was wonderful and unfair. It's exactly what so many of us need to hear. And I can really only hope to sort of be as comfortable in authenticity and as willing to sort of let the universe tell me where to go as you have been, especially just the way that you're just incredible. And I'm so happy that I got to talk to you and to hear from you and to learn and gain some advice from you. But
I hope to see you get back to Harlem.
Oh, I cannot wait to get back to the city. I am counting down the days, and I would love to. I will definitely ask Stacey. Maybe I'll go with her daughter, Shade, and drop by to say hi.
Great.
But it